Welcome to The Difference Engine, the show for founders, funders, and the category curious.
Don't confuse size, don't confuse valuation with category leadership.
I'm not the only person frustrated by this.
You disagree with my analysis.
I do.
You either acquire or you are acquired.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
And it's proof that you're winning the argument.
We all know history is written by the winners.
Today, it's my pleasure to be talking with Vincent Peeters, who you might detect from his accent is a native of the Netherlands, but who is now CEO of Berlin-based ProductsUp. ProductsUp is the category-leading product-to-consumer, that's P2C, commerce platform that manages all product content journeys while fostering connections between brands, retailers, marketplaces, and their consumers. No stranger to category design before leading ProductsUp through its category journey, Vincent had a distinguished career in global and pan-European leadership roles at category leaders TIBCO, Click, Siebel Systems, and Oracle. He's also got entrepreneurship credentials as well, being a co-founder at Curo Technologies, which was sold to Frame Technology and ultimately acquired by Adobe. We're going to be talking to Vincent today about what got him interested in category design, what it's like to lead a category-defining company, the lessons he can share from his experience, and what he sees coming in tech in the year. Oh, and what pisses him off on a regular basis. Vincent Peeters, welcome to The Difference Engine. Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Jonathan. And yourself?
I'm great. It's really, really good to see you. It's been some time. So, listeners, as we mentioned, we're lucky to be able to speak with Vincent today, not just because he's actually found some time in his incredibly busy diary to be with us, but because he can really give us that first-hand perspective of what it's like to actually lead a category journey. So I wanted to start off, Vincent, by asking you two questions really in one. What was it that got you interested in category in the first place? Yeah, did you have some sort of Damascene moment, like reading a particular book or seeing somebody speak? Or was it just the experience of working with, you know, what we know are a succession of companies that clearly by accident or design had become category leaders?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I had the privilege of starting my career at Oracle, which was then just in the middle of the database war, fighting Sybase, Ingres, and many others. And later on, fast forward, I joined a company called Siebel Systems. We had 200 employees when I started. We were selling enterprise sales force automation, which already was something new because every country had its own kind of small little customer database, but it was not an enterprise perspective. And that evolved into what we now know as CRM. And it was actually Siebel that was the first company branding CRM as a real new category. And that also allowed Siebel to have a unique story, a new perspective, which really appealed to CXOs that understood they had to implement themselves new platforms in order to reorganize themselves and to become customer-centric. And that allowed Siebel for a long time to take this number one position in this space, which was at the end then completely distorted when Marc Benioff came with the SaaS offering, basically. And that all itself was an experience that showed the power, basically, of defining a category, defining a complete new perspective in the then already very busy market with many different software solutions. You know, inventing something completely new in an already very crowded market to really change the perspective how Siebel could position itself.
It's very interesting because I was also at the beginning of the Siebel journey in Europe at that time, and what you say really rings true. But when you arrived at ProductsUp from TIBCO back in August 2020 as the chief sales officer, listeners may not realize that you were appointed CEO in October 21. What was it that made you think that ProductsUp could succeed in designing a new category? I mean, I assume that no matter how much better any product is in a very crowded commerce space, it's hard to differentiate for customers. And many of the GSIs, of course, have got their partners already in place. So my view would be it could be difficult to get attention.
Yeah, that's true. But when I looked to ProductsUp first time, they were already doing amazing things. They were the absolute best provider for, you know, complex and huge volume-based feed management, which is uploading catalogs to social media, Google, etc., to basically do online advertising and create a desire for consumers to buy stuff. they were already uploading information to marketplaces to allow people to buy things. And they were already doing product content syndication to retailers and distributors to get the product data from brands to the retailer, who then again had to get it online and do social advertising, etc. And they were doing the opposite, which was helping retailers and online platforms to absorb data from many different brands and to create a unified internal catalog. So they were already doing all those different things, but basically they were missing the overall bigger story, so to speak. And when I then analyzed the market and the competitors, it became clear that everybody was missing basically the bigger story. And you could see that many organizations were implementing point solutions, even for simple, well, complex things as feed management, were often implemented per country, because digital marketing started really very distributed in many large organizations. And then you could see that people doing it different per brand, per country, even for different channels in very different ways. And it was, you know, far from optimal. But then the shocking thing was people were doing 90% the same work for uploading things for marketplaces and getting product data to the retailers. Highly disconnected, highly inefficient. And obviously, when you see there is pain, there is something to gain. And if you could see that there's a bigger story to tell, then you can basically elevate the game. And that really attracted my attention.
So there was a product proposition that you could see, which was to essentially simplify the journey for the customer.
Yeah, and start to think really in platforms and cut across organizational pillars and regional pillars, basically, in order to enable organizations to optimize themselves. That was one thing, to get things done faster, cheaper, better. But then I also saw that there was kind of an even bigger theme behind this, because you start to realize that in thousands of different places, people were sending product information to their target consumers. But if you do that very disorganized and scattered over many different countries, different channels, different organizational units, it's very hard to start to analyze what product content is resonating, what digital images, whatever celebrities we're advertising with, create attraction, drive conversion, make things really happen, you know, in fashion, which colors, which sizes, which shapes. And if you're not in control of all those different product content journeys, you know, it becomes impossible to analyze them and put AI on top of them and become a smarter organization and to react fast to new trends or new capabilities. And that really made me realize that there was a much bigger play here to play by doing things really different.
So you essentially saw an e-commerce Tower of Babel that needed sorting out. I think it had grown like Topsy, as we would say in the UK, and it really needed sorting out and simplifying.
Absolutely. Now, with my conversation with the then CEO, Johannes Hett, and co-founder and chief innovation officer, Marcel Hollerbach, and basically the main shareholders, it was clear that they were also interested in, you know, playing bigger and elevating the game and go from selling individual point solutions to transform to a true platform. And with that, we came to realization that we actually could establish a new category.
That sounds incredibly important, you know, for any senior person in the IT industry, particularly at the moment, thinking of moving company. Do the people that fund the company really understand category, and are they prepared to make the leap of faith to do something that nobody else has thought of? So that common belief amongst the leader of the company and the funders of the company has to be there.
Absolutely. That's fundamental, because building a category is, you would say, obviously a long-term play. You know, you do not only announce the category and everybody goes like, aha, you know, that's fantastic, let's all do that. Unfortunately.
if only, Vincent.
Yeah, if only. Unfortunately, that's not very realistic. So, you know, you have to put a lot of effort, of course, in designing the category, in defining basically a new narrative. And with that comes kind of new language, creating all your marketing materials and stuff around it, basically transform the way how you start to communicate to customers and start to influence, you know, other people in the industry, basically. But obviously, because it's a long-term play, again, you know, the investors and the founders and, you know, key other execs have to really buy into this. And then you truly have to put a lot of effort in also explaining to your existing coworkers, all your employees, you know, why this is really important to do and what's the real opportunity and why this is such an exciting journey to be engaged with. Because it asks for many people to start to think completely different. They have been doing certain things very well for many years, and that brought them already a lot of success. And now suddenly you ask them to adopt a different narrative, a different story, a bigger story, a more ambitious story, a more strategic story to engage with. And that's not always easy for everybody. And again, you really have to bring the whole company along with you in order to be able to have only the slightest chance of becoming successful.
I mean, that neatly leads into the third thing I wanted to talk to you about in this section, which is, you know, Paul and I bang on a lot about how it's essential for the CEO to be front and center in the category journey. And I think we're already hearing from you that that is probably the case. And I've always thought, you know, when I've been in that position, if you're going to lead a company, it's essential that the team realizes that you wouldn't ask them to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself. So that association between the CEO and the category journey to us always appears absolutely vital.
No, that's definitely true. You cannot delegate responsibility for building the category to somebody else. As the CEO, you are immediately also the chief category officer. You have to lead from the front. You have to ensure you repeat the message constantly to build the trust and the faith with, again, all the stakeholders, the shareholders, the employees, the customers, the partners, the ecosystem. And you also have to be, again, realizing it's a long-term play. So at the moment you launch the category, people don't immediately start to buy the strategy. They still buy the individual modules you provide that fulfills their immediate needs, that, you know, where their immediate pain is. The traction starts when people realize, like, oh, if I engage this product up, I can not only fix my feed management problem, but actually I can expand to also do marketplace, product consolidation, etc. So you have to find those ambitious people, people that also are heroes in their company, finding that they have to break through their digital walls, basically, in order to do something bigger and do something better for their company.
That's really cool. So I think to try and summarize what you've just told our listeners there, I guess first, becoming a category leader may not result from a sudden flash of realization. If you're not the founder, ensure there's an appetite amongst shareholders and particularly investors for the category journey. And if you want to lead a category journey, walk the talk at all times.
Definitely. That's a must. Without that, there is no chance you can succeed.
Thanks, Vincent.
You know what? This really grinds my gears.
So, and now we're going to go on to Grinds My Gears. And regular listeners will realize this is the time in the episode where we or our guests get the opportunity to vent about any particular tech issue. So, Vincent, what's been grinding your gears on the continent recently?
Well, it's actually not particularly the tech issue. It's the organizational issues that prevent companies to implement horizontal platforms to become more successful. It is their self-interest or lack of desire at their side to play bigger or to fix things that keep people in their smaller thinking and organizational pillars that were created 50 years ago that prevent them to adopt new technologies and fight against other organizations that do implement horizontal platforms. Obviously, new organizations like Uber and Amazon and Airbnb implement global platforms. They can become global players very rapidly because they can scale tremendously and be very fast. And that should be a very clear lesson for the establishment to basically adapt and adopt those platforms and the platform thinking. And then it's still almost astonishing to see how many people present that in order to fix their tomorrow's problem without wanting even to think about the next week's disaster that they should really be worried about.
Yeah, I mean, talking about disasters, we've seen some cracking examples of just how wrong it can go if you don't get this particular issue right. You know, the Post Office Horizon scandal in the UK, it still moves on. But, you know, what is it in particular that doesn't seem to work? Because we've been through this cycle over and over again.
Well, often, if you want to implement horizontal platforms that cut through regional thinking or that cut through organizational pillars like sales, marketing, logistics, etc., you need cross-departmental willingness to change. And everybody has their own KPIs and their own self-interest and their own other problems to fix. And thus, you need to get to either clear heroes that recognize your opportunity and are willing to be your champion and your innovators in their organizations, and or you have to get high enough in the organization to get people realize that there's actually a big opportunity here to do something fundamentally different. And I think we all realize that if you want different outcomes, you have to stop doing the same thing, meaning you have to do something different as well. And doing something different sounds obviously easy and simple, but in complex, larger, older established organizations, that will by default create a lot of resistance. And in order to break through that, you need a lot of kind of open mind thinking. I have to get to the right level to sponsor that, basically.
I mean, that's interesting, because I mean, that points at the idea of leadership being massively important. You're talking about the idea of a what I'd call a culture of creative destruction. But sometimes it's difficult to do that when you're trying to service a client need today and trying to move your own company forward so that you can meet that need tomorrow. Should you just start a parallel company, a parallel stealth company, a sort of skunk works to get that going? Or is it possible to move forward companies effectively in one piece?
It is possible to move companies forward, and it can be done in multiple ways. It can be done by very strong sector buy-in and ruthlessly, you know, push this through. You can also start with implementing parts of it in a part of your organization, show the success and drive adoption. So there are multiple ways of doing this. And one is faster than the other. One is easier than the other. It also depends on the real pain, competition, pressure and other factors that will really show you what is the best approach towards implementing this kind of thinking, basically.
You know, that sounds very sensible. I was going to ask you, are there companies in your opinion that have successfully transitioned to a platform, you know, rather than actually started out with one, or reinvented their customer proposition and then created a brand new category?
We see a mix. We see obviously brand new companies or relatively new companies that successfully implement or start with immediately implementing horizontal platforms. We have companies like Farfetch and VDXL that implement online platforms, and as such, they can serve many countries or the whole world and be very fast and not only have a very appealing offer for the consumer, but really can move very fast and very flexible. And that's not only because they have the platform to execute, but because they have the global view, they can build also the analytics and the intelligence that shows them where they have to move and where they have to change and where the interesting target consumer groups are that they have to address with particular propositions. But at the same time, we do see that there are really huge brands and huge retailers that successfully continue to reinvent themselves and implement new platforms on a global scale that brings them that extra advantage. You know, sometimes it kind of takes some time for them to reorganize themselves and get ready for it. But, you know, we, for instance, serve IKEA globally with a single platform for doing all their online advertising. And that is an enormous change compared to where IKEA was 20 years ago, where basically every country had their own catalog, their own pricing. There was, you know, a lot of commonality, but there was initially too much difference that would allow them to go global and implement global platforms. But they saw the opportunity and they truly reorganized themselves to be able to benefit from the unique opportunity that was presented to them.
So the message there is sorting out chaos is really, really important in moving organizations forward, because continuous growth just does that. So What about some of the categorization efforts that are going on at the moment around AI? Everybody seems to think that AI is the magic ingredient, but it strikes me that if you put this extra ingredient into an environment that hasn't been properly developed into a global platform, you're just going to get a load more chaos.
Definitely. I mean, AI obviously will play a big role, and there will be many successes, but there will be also many disasters and failures. It's great for many organizations to experiment. And with the generative AI, you can create, you know, new content, which creates great opportunity. However, if you don't have a single platform to manage all the content and all the product content journeys, and you put AI in many different spots to do their own thing without any coordination, you can just multiply the chaos, right? You can get inconsistency in product information that you communicate to your customers. You can be inconsistent, incompliant, create brand damage, and it can do a lot of bad things. At the same time, obviously, the opportunity is enormous. I mean, with generative AI, it becomes very easy to generate specific product content for different target audiences. A product description for an amateur photography fetishist will be different than for a tourist and will be different for a professional. Might be the same camera, but you might want to describe it differently to make it more appealing. Now, you can do this very easily with generative AI, and if you then have a global platform to experiment with that, find the right kind of prompting to get the right outcomes, and then distribute that new finding consistently and fast across the globe, they can experiment, you can do A-B testing, you can find the best outcomes, and then benefit from it globally, still be consistent and in charge of the message, and truly benefit from those capabilities without ending up into chaos and without getting completely out of control.
So there you are. If you want Vincent's best view of what to get sorted out, go to a global platform, sort out your chaos before you do anything else, and particularly before you add AI to your category.
What does the future hold? Let's look into our crystal ball.
And now, listeners, it's time to look in the crystal ball. And this is the time in the episode where we ask our guests to look into their own particular crystal ball and tell us what they see happening in tech in the rest of 2024 and beyond. So, with the benefit of decades in the IT industry, Vincent, what can you see in your glass sphere?
What we definitely can see is that the amount of data that we start to process will only continue to double every year. We already upload trillions of product records to the various channels for years. And the catalogs get bigger and bigger. And what you now see with generative AI and other opportunities is that you can start to make target audience-specific content at scale. Right? So you can define your target audience and adjust your imagery, your product data, your product descriptions for those specific target audiences. As an example that I often use is you can have a white sneaker and you put George Clooney in it, and I might get attracted to that sneaker and think, okay, that's a very handsome, successful, middle-aged man, and it looks very good in those sneakers, so maybe I want to buy a pair of those. But my children would never buy the sneaker with George Clooney in it. But if you then put Harry Styles in the same sneaker, they will certainly think that's a cool sneaker, right? So that's a very simple example of saying how, with different content for the same product, you can appeal to different target audiences.
What's the role of AI in that? That presumably AI has got a lot to contribute in that scenario.
With AI, you can generate really a lot of product content that's specific for different target audiences. It almost would be unaffordable to do that if you have catalogs with hundreds of thousands or millions of products. Doing that for individual products for different target audiences would be simply not doable from a cost perspective. With generative AI, it suddenly becomes doable to make appealing content for different target audiences based on the same base products. But that still means that the amount of content you want to syndicate more than quadruples. You also want to wonder as a brand, do I leave it up to the retailer, or will I create already the content for different target audiences for my retailers and marketplaces where I want my products to be sold? Which again leads to much more data that has to be syndicated between the brand and the retailer to enable again the retailer to bring that content to the target audiences, whilst because also the brand itself, by online advertising and probably marketplaces, has the same challenge and opportunity to reach new target audiences. So the volume will simply explode as a result of what generative AI can deliver. But of course, it brings then again new challenges because you need real global platforms that are able to handle that mass volume.
Are we allowed to mention the A word here going forward and, you know, the effect of that particular behemoth on everybody else's behavior in the retail channel?
Definitely. I mean, there are other things that Amazon drives. If you can get, as a brand, a new product live on Amazon in 24 hours, then retailers and other online platforms really have a problem if it takes them 2 weeks to get new products live. Because if the newest products are on Amazon, where does the consumer go? They go to Amazon. So it becomes essential for retailers and other online platforms to enormously speed up the onboarding time they require. And therefore, they have to reorganize themselves at the back end to absorb this new content of new products from, you know, the brands they represent much faster than they ever did before. So that's just one example of a complete different dimension that's often overlooked.
So going forward, you're seeing that everything is going to accelerate further. AI is going to have a role to play.
Absolutely.
Amazon is going to be increasingly critical to getting products to market. But you're going to have to work very, very hard at the speed at which you're going to successfully onboard your product to that platform.
And to different platforms. And therefore, the other platforms, to, in order to be able to compete with Amazon, they also have to transform themselves and must enable brands to get also on their platforms products live in 24 hours. And if they are not organized properly and they need a lot of manual work and complex processes to get products live on their platforms and therefore need 2 weeks, for example, to get new products live, where it only takes Amazon 24 hours, then you can see there's an other competitive advantage Amazon has over the other retailers and online platforms. So that then immediately becomes, you know, a very huge challenge for them. So it's the speed, it's the volume, it's many different factors that are introduced as new challenges. A lot of them driven by Amazon, by the success of Amazon.
Okay, so the message out there is really get a grip. Things are only going to get tougher and Amazon's only going to get stronger.
Absolutely. And unless you reorganize yourself and step up to the challenge, yeah, you will have a very difficult time in front of you as a retailer or online platform.
Great. Thanks, Vincent.
You've got to learn to earn.
So, final section with Vincent today is learn and earn. This is about what Vincent can tell us about the lessons of his category journey. I mean, Vincent, you know, as a CEO, you're a few years into your category journey at ProductSup, and you know, you continue to lead the company at difficult times in the global economy. I'd like to tap into that knowledge for our listeners who may be earlier on their journey or maybe thinking about actually beginning a category journey. So what have been the standout learnings on your particular category journey?
There are, of course, multiple. One is, with defining category, you do not only reframe your positioning and your offering, you also reframe your customers' needs. And you have to therefore reframe your communication, again, work with the clients to make them realize that what they actually should be doing with your platform might be different than for the purpose they initially bought it. And there's a bigger opportunity there. So those things are often overlooked. The second thing, I think, which is really important and where we initially could have done better, is that it's not enough to only communicate clearly internally about the new strategy of launching, defining, launching, and pushing for the new category. It's not enough to only show people, you know, what it could bring us and what it could bring the world and what it could mean for our clients. And why a new category for them is transformative for their business and what's in it for them to do so. It is as important to also show the steps to your own staff, to your employees, your co-workers, of what is required step by step to get there, to win battle by battle. And the roadmap on how to get to a successful launch of a category and become the category leader is as important than only showing the desired endpoint, so to speak. Because people have to understand, well, once we launch the category, it's all great and it's fantastic and exciting, but what's expected from me? How do we know we are creating success? You know, am I not still building a great feed management product? Am I not still selling a great marketplace solution? So you have to link the operational tactical requirements and what is expected from everybody towards basically the category journey to ensure people feel they're on the right path.
So when you're doing that, I mean, there is the requirement as CEO to effectively keep the lights on. So you know, you're, I assume, trying to balance the issue of keeping the company running today, selling the actual product group that you have to sell right now, and simultaneously moving the company and expectations of it forward.
Totally. Again, as I said already at the beginning, at the moment you launch the category, unfortunately, I say in most cases, people don't go, aha, embrace it and run with it. So people might say, interesting perspective. But my current need is, I need to upload a catalog of 1 million products to all those different channels. Can you help me with this? Yes or no? You have to find this balance between selling into the immediate needs and immediate pains your customers are struggling with, whilst positioning the platform as a new category of a new way of working, a new way of thinking about basically the opportunity and make people realize that their current pain is just a symptom of the broader problem. Whilst, you know, at the same time, those people do need a remedy for their immediate pain, but you want to attract those, especially those that already understand that also they have then a bigger opportunity. And this could be for them the start of a journey to adopt the platform and adopt the category and solve bigger problems for their own organizations.
And it strikes me, you know, within that, that there's another issue you must have to deal with, which is extending the personas that you're selling to, because you're moving from a tactical satisfaction of a current problem to looking to the future about how things are going to evolve in a much more strategic way.
Definitely. So you definitely go 1, 2, or 3 levels higher in organization to ultimately evangelize people of the bigger opportunity that exists for them. And you have to get those higher level people and personas in the organization that are able to oversee more of the challenge and the problems and the opportunity that they have that requires to reorganize themselves and break out of those organizational or digital walls that they built internally. That means fighting against resistance. That means working with change management. That means getting higher level executive buy-in into a bigger long-term journey. Whilst they also have to fix their immediate needs, whilst also they have to make their quarters. And, you know, so it's always the interest of not only you, but also your customer to realize their shorter-term goals while working on a longer-term strategic perspective.
And my final question in this section is, somebody has immense amount of experience in enterprise-level software sales. As you're pursuing this strategy, is there always the issue that the sales cycles may increase? They may get longer, even though what you'll be selling in the end will be bigger and stickier?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes and no. So that's not very helpful. If it immediately resonates at higher levels, you even might get enormous increased support for fixing the short-term problem on your platform rather than with a point solution, because the higher levels see the bigger opportunity. And with more executive support, you get a higher sense of urgency, you get faster access to funds, at least your customer gets. So, you know, that might even sometimes accelerate it. At the same time, if you're ready, start low with, you know, customer reaching out with a very tactical operational pain, then before you get it on the agenda of higher level individuals that have a broader perspective, obviously can take a lot of time. So also there you have to find the balance of, do I immediately sell the strategy Or do I truly go to land and expand and say, let's land first, let's fix this pain. And whilst we are fixing the pain, work our way up and make more people in this organization realize that we, whilst we're actually fixing an operational pain, they could leverage now this technology that we already now have in-house to fix a much bigger challenge and, you know, grab the bigger opportunity.
Right. So there you have it. That's a few top-level issues if you're going to have to deal with, if you're going to lead a category journey. The reality that the personas you're selling to are going to change and potentially expand. You're selling both tactics and strategy, and the resources required may increase. The sales cycle may increase, or they may not, as Vincent says. But of course, you always need to ensure the revenues are coming in and satisfying today's customers' needs. But most of all, I think we've heard from this episode, make sure you're comfortable with being a chief evangelist. Something we expect is a role tailor-made for Vincent. Thank you very much, Vincent Peters.
You're welcome, Norris. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Difference Engine and our guest, Vincent Peters, CEO of P2C commerce leader, ProductsUp. If you want to learn more about Vincent and ProductsUp, go to www.productsup.com. If you want to explore further the category design topics discussed in this episode, then please read our blog posts at becategorical.com or tune in to other episodes of The Difference Engine, wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you're in tech and need a strategy to categorize your business, product or service, then we can help. Get in touch with us via the show notes or again at becategorical.com. Thank you for listening. And remember, don't be better, be different.